Once more, Jesus spoke to them in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to call those who had been invited to the wedding banquet, but they would not come. Again, he sent other servants, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, look, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fat calves have been slaughtered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet.' But they made light of it and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. While the rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Go therefore into the main streets and invite everyone you find to the wedding banquet.' Those servants went out into the streets and gathered all whom they found, both good and bad. So the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing a wedding robe. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?' And he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" The Gospel of the Lord. The last 2 weeks, I've found myself resisting another of Jesus' parables. This one involving kings and servants, a wedding and a wedding garment, and someone being cast out. Many theologians have neatly ascribed each group in this parable a role in the context in which Jesus lived, usually with only the purest and most true being able to stay at the wedding. Everyone who is lesser than either did not accept the invitation or were caught wearing the wrong clothes. This parable has been cast as a sort of moral tale about how only the exceptional rise to the occasion, for many are called, but few are chosen. The most common interpretation I found could be summarized simply as only the cream rises to the top while everyone else is punished. Frankly, I find myself discontent with this interpretation because this kind of Christian exceptionalism has not borne good fruit. Christians believing that they are superior to their neighbors has produced violent othering of those deemed unworthy of the wedding banquet. This judgmental and insular form of Christianity has caused immense damage and so much pain. It has produced a culture that is out of alignment with Jesus' own teachings, which in the book of Matthew say things like, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself," and "love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Reading this parable about a person being cast out of a wedding reminded me of my beloved friend Marie. Marie was asked a few years ago to be in the groom's party for a wedding. This groom was her very best friend. They had grown up together and were exceptionally close. He joyfully invited Marie to be in his party, not considering that it would make the bride's parents uncomfortable to have a female person be a groomsman. When his future in-laws found out about Marie being in the wedding, they demanded that she join the bridesmaids and that she wear a dress, something that Marie is very uncomfortable with and did not want to do. When the bride and groom resisted their parents' unkind and unfair demand, they were told that if Marie were to be a groomsman wearing pants in the wedding, then they would not be paying for the wedding. After all, their friends were going to be there. How could they financially support such a radical move from Christian tradition? A woman being a groomsman? A female person wearing pants in a wedding party in a Christian church? This would be embarrassing, and would reflect badly on them. And so Marie was cast out of the wedding, into heartbreak, into weeping, into suffering. Just like that, over a wedding garment, cast out. Last Sunday, Pastor Paul stated in his sermon that the rejected are the very ones God moves toward. This little piece of information has lodged itself in my mind, irritating me, and I've been turning it around and around in regard to this mysterious and disturbing parable, and in regard to Marie being cast out for not wearing a dress, for not being a male. There's a common assumption that the king character in Jesus' parables always represents God. But Matthew actually clearly states in the Greek that the king is a man king in this parable. The king in this story is a human king who is fickle and violent, burning down cities and throwing people out because they are wearing the wrong clothes. He is inconsiderate of the feelings of others and is totally unaware of the suffering he causes, which reminds me of those who hurt Marie. So if the king in this parable does not represent God, then perhaps the outcast without wedding clothes does not represent the sinful. This is another common interpretation. Perhaps the outcast, the sufferer who weeps, represents Christ himself. After all, right before this story in the book of Matthew, Jesus says that the stone the builder rejected has become the cornerstone. Could this be a story about that stone that the builder chose to reject? Have I, and so many others, missed the point entirely? Have we willed ourselves to see this parable as a champion narrative, rather than to see the unsettling truth that we are led toward suffering and not away from it? Could following being who God has called us to be, as Christ did, mean being thrown into an outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth? Apparently, yes. And this brings us back to the root of my irritation with what Paul says about God moving towards those who are rejected. Because, my friends, I do not want to suffer. Like Marie, I do not want to be outcast. I do not want to weep. I do not want to gnash my teeth, and I am afraid of the dark. And yet, this is where God comes to wrestle with us, in this darkness, until we are blessed, like Jacob at the river. God meets us here in this horrible place that is part of reality as it is. And it is unavoidable. So I totally get why people resist the truth of this parable and why they cling to a theology of glory rather than to what Luther calls a theology of the cross. And honestly, I want to join in this resistance and cling to a theology of glory. It sounds so much better. But I cannot. I cannot because I am actively suffering. I am suffering because I am losing someone I love immensely. My very best friend Will is dying. He is being cast out of his body, cast out of this world, and crucified by a cancer we are unable to stop. So I am frustrated by this parable because it does not offer me a happy ending. It does not give a solution, and it does not offer tangible illumination. There is no Easter morning in this parable. There is only Good Friday. Why, God, why would you have your beloved son suffer? Why? I am haunted by a litany of questions. Why was Marie and the man in the parable cast out for wearing the wrong clothes? Why are human beings being cast out of our country and separated from their children? Why are so many white folks living in abject poverty, unheard and despised? Why are black people being murdered in the streets by police officers? Why is there a virus and fires and political division? Why do children die? Why is there so much pain? Why must we suffer? Tell me why. Why do we scapegoat? Why do we blame? Why do we cast each other out? Why allow Will to suffer and die from cancer? Why allow Jesus to die on a cross? My God, why have you forsaken us? And I struggle with what I'm supposed to do about all of this. In insipid vanity, in youthful stupidity, I fret and ask, is it my fault? How can I fix it? I gnash my teeth, I weep, I writhe, and I wrestle with these questions in the outer darkness, and then there is only silence, which wraps itself around me, enveloping me. I sink into it exhausted. I am exhausted. Will says that when he is in this place, when he is in this outer darkness after a year of chemo and months of constant puking and overwhelming pain, he says he feels like he is a baby held in the palm of God. When there is nothing left to do or say, when we have to face reality as it is, when we are cast into darkness, the primordial shadow from which all things emerge, there we find God. Not an idea of God, not the word God, but the God which births reality itself. God is in the darkness which we are cast into, the womb of reality as it is. For we are human and we suffer, and it cannot be avoided. For we are human and we suffer, and even Jesus cannot avoid it. So we join him, the Son of God, the Anointed One, in being cast out into suffering, into crucifixion, into death on a cross. We suffer what is ours to suffer so that it does not turn to violence and get passed down. God, may it not turn to violence and get passed down. And this is where God meets us. Not on the mountaintop, but in the ditch. Not in the wedding party, but on the edge of the venues by the bathrooms that smell like piss and vomit. This is where Marie was invited to sit at the reception. Not in our comfortable, safe homes, but on the margins. In the spaces where there is violence and abuse and poverty. This is where God meets us. Not in the center, but on the periphery, on the border where we fall into silence, where we fall into the outer darkness Jesus describes. And it is here that the Most Holy One catches us, in this sacred and primordial darkness. It is here that the Divine One catches us in the palm of her hand. She catches us and holds us like we are babies, breathing softly upon us and blessing us, whispering in the language only our hearts can understand. I love you, and you are mine. Amen.